The Guardian.
The Guardian Books Podcast with Claire Armistead.
Welcome to our instant review of the Booker Shortlist. I'm The Guardian's literary editor, and with me is Sarah Crown, editor of guardian.co.uk/books. Now, I'm very glad to say that we actually have read all the shortlisted works between us, and we even have a reading from one of the contenders. Sarah, first things first, just run through the list for us, will you?
Okay, in alphabetical order, on the shortlist is Peter Carey with Parrot and Olivier in America, Emma Donoghue with Room, Damon Galgut with In a Strange Room, Howard Jacobson with The Finkler Question, Andrea Levy with The Long Song, and Tom McCarthy with C.
Ah, so what do you think of that list? Is it a good one?
I think it is. I think it's really exciting. We've obviously, over the last week, we've gone backwards and forwards with who did we think was going to be on it and who might make the cut and who was going to get pushed out. And there are, you know, clearly, as we'll go on to talk about a bit later, I think, there are some omissions and people who might perhaps, you know, have been expected to appear on it. But I think it's kind of, it's mixed and vibrant, and it feels fresh and exciting. And yeah, I'm, as with the long list, I feel really kind of thrilled by it, actually.
Well, let's start by going through them one by one. Howard Jacobson. We have a bit of a soft spot for Howard Jacobson on this podcast, don't we?
Yes, a slight literary crush on Howard Jacobson, I think. Yes, he's been longlisted twice before for Kaluki Nights in 2006 and Who's Sorry Now in 2002. But this is the first time he's ever been shortlisted. And I know that I don't think we're alone, Claire, in thinking that it's long overdue to see him sort of going through to the final round of it.
It's a comic novel, isn't it?
Yes.
And it's quite unusual for comic novels to
Well,
get
exactly.
This far.
So it's sort of a victory for him and a victory for comic fiction at the same time, I think, because it's a funny book. He's got a very sort of acerbic sense of humour which comes out in his fiction. As you'd expect from Jacobson, who has been called regularly, I think, the British Philip Roth, it's a book that explores his Jewishness, what it means to be Jewish. And that's, in fact, what the title is about. The Finkler Question means the Jewish question. Sam Finkler is the best friend of Julian Treslev, whose story the novel is, and Treslev uses the word Finkler to mean Jew. And although it is all about Jewishness, Treslev himself isn't Jewish, so it's sort of about his obsession with the idea of what it means to be Jewish. And I think it's a great book and definitely deserves to be shortlisted.
Now, that's very much in the present, set in the present.
Yes, yeah.
Then we come to Peter Carey, whose Parrot and Olivier in America is very much of the sort of Oscar and Lucinda bent, isn't it, back in history. Now, I think he actually has said that he thinks this is his best novel, I think. There was a little bit of tepidness about the reviewing of it. It's a fantastically rich and eccentric story of a French émigré to the New World and his servant. And the French émigré is loosely based on Alexis de Tocqueville, who wrote Democracy in America. Mm. And it's got this sort of it's slightly similar to another of the shortlisted books, the Andrea Levy Long Song, in that it's sort of half in the story and half out of the story. So these characters exist, they're very conscious of themselves as fictional creations. And they're also, there's a great knowingness about the setting of it. For example, you have, you know, there are pigs rooting about on Broadway, and, you know, Times Square yet to be built is a huge, great, muddy tract. So there's a sort of delight that his best fiction has.
And that sense of America sort of creating itself, which is you know, it's a subject that authors come back to again and again, that never gets tired. It's always exciting to read that kind of thing, I think.
Mm. And one of the things about Peter Carey I think is interesting is he's an Australian, but he has a hugely European sensibility, and he lives in America and he's writing about America. Mm. So in a way, he's bringing together all those three strands, and he keeps on doing it, and I feel it gets richer and richer.
And actually, of course, he's sort of the opposite of Jacobson in a way, because he's won the Booker twice before. So this would make him the most crowned Booker winner, would it?
The most crowned, yeah, yeah. Well, I wonder how likely that is. It would be... OK, so let's move on to something completely different now. This is, in a way, one of the wild cards is Emma Donoghue's Room, which I read this weekend, and it made me feel quite weird. I came out and started bumping into the furniture. Sarah, tell us a little bit more about it.
Yes, I read this probably about a month and a half ago, and I was really not expecting to enjoy it. It's, as everyone probably knows by now, because there's been so much press about the book, it was inspired or triggered by, I think Donoghue prefers to say, the Joseph Fritzl case in Austria of the father locking his daughter in an underground cellar and fathering children on her. And it sort of shies away from some of the details of that. This isn't a story about incest, but it is a story about a single room told through the eyes of Jack, a five-year-old boy, son of the woman who's been locked up in the room. And I really thought I was going to hate it, and I absolutely loved it. I thought it was brilliant, kind of just invigorating. And for a book that's about such a grim subject, it kind of conjures beauty, I think. I thought it was wonderful.
And the point is that the boy knows nothing else except for the room.
Exactly.
And so there's a real concreteness, isn't there, about the way that she creates this universe, that it's not a chair, it is chair.
Yeah.
There is one chair, one table in his world.
It's a platonic ideal, isn't it, in a really warped way. It's that's all that exists, and so that's all that he knows.
And then, of course, once, in a way, the sort of saddest bit of it is that once they get out, which is represents freedom for his mother, it represents the end of safety for him. I just think it's incredibly sad and poignant piece of work.
And again, as has been said on several occasions, it's a sort of in miniature the mother-child relationship and the idea of sort of going forth from a very small place and
you well, know, like pregnancy. Actually, it's like pregnancy, including the mother's Ma's rotten teeth.
Yes.
What will come to all of us. Let's go on to the next one, which is another historical novel, is Andrea Levy's The Long Song. And now I interviewed Andrea at Hay, and she was fantastic. In fact, if you can get your hands on the audio version of this, you must get it. It is she reads it absolutely beautifully. And the point is that it's all in the voice. The main character is a slave girl called Miss July, and the novel really harks, it's very different to Small Island, which of course was the book that she won the Orange with, in that instead of being a realist novel, it harks back to Tristram Shandy. It's very much an 18th century voice, half in, half out of the story. And Miss July is not, you know, she's no better than she ought to be. And and it's just sort of joyful, even though in the background you have one of the most horrific episodes in the abolition of slavery, which is the 1938 slave uprising in Jamaica, which was so brutally put down that actually it horrified opinion back in the UK enough to hasten the abolition of slavery. So there we go. That's very powerful, very funny, very sort of peppery, sparky. Now, again, something completely different, Tom McCarthy's
Sort of Sea. It's the feature of this list, isn't it? All the books are completely different, which is one of the reasons why it's so exciting. Yeah, this is another book that's had a lot of publicity around it since it came out. Chris Taylor in The Guardian called it a 1960s-style anti-novel that's fundamentally hostile to the notion of character and dramatises or encodes a set of ideas concerning subjectivity. Now, I read that review and thought, there's no way I'm going to read this book. It sounds absolutely horrifying. But then again, this is one where I've had my kind of preconceptions completely changed when I actually got round to picking it up. And I read it over the weekend and I thought it was absolutely brilliant. I really enjoyed it. I can completely see why a panel that's chaired by a former poet laureate has picked this book, because in many ways it's like reading a book-length poem in that everything connects to everything else. So you feel by the end of it that you're just absolutely thrumming with all the resonance. Everything is symbolic and mythology just kind of runs through it, and it's incredibly exciting. What has been a criticism of it is that it's too experimental, that it forsakes character for symbolism or modernism. And while that's perhaps true in that the main character, Serge Carfax or Carafax, I'm not quite sure how you would say it, is quite lightly sketched in. He's sort of a cipher and is our kind of just a sort of person standing in for us in the story. The period is drawn beautifully and reminded me a lot of A.S. Byatt's novel, the children's book, which was shortlisted for last year's Booker, which is set in that same pre-First World War period in the UK. So, I really felt very excited after reading it.
And he emerged in 1999 as the General Secretary of the International Necronautical Society.
Yes.
What on earth is that? And where is he coming from? What is he?
Well, his his background is sort of art, I think. Sorry, I can't really answer this question.
The first book was actually published by a Paris avant-garde art publisher, wasn't it?
Yes.
It wasn't published by fiction. Then he was picked up by Alma Books, which is an independent. I think that the passage of his books and the way that he's come up to the top is really interesting.
Yes, because when Remainder, his first book, came out, it wasn't very widely reviewed, but then it just sort of, it grew and grew, and there was a real word of mouth thing behind it. Zadie Smith called it one of the great English novels of the past 10 years, and now everyone knows about it, everyone talks about it and holds it up as an example of brilliant writing. As with this book, a sort of return to modernism and experimentalism, which has sort of been flattened out in the late 20th century. So I think it's really invigorating to see a book like this on the shortlist.
So it's not the only book either that deals with form, that plays games with form. The final one to mention is Damon Galgut's In a Strange Room.
This is one of your favourites.
Oh, I just adore this book. But I have to say, I tried to start a Twitter strand on called Galgut, #Galgut, if anybody wants to join. It is still there, but nobody joined it. And my question is whether it's a novel. It's about the point at which fiction comes into being. And the basic format of it is three stories of three journeys which Galgut himself made. And he calls himself he, but it's at the point at which the I that experienced the journeys, transmutes in memory into the he of Galgut looking back over the story. So it is in a way about the moment at which memory becomes fiction, creates fiction. I think it's absolutely brilliant. And we are lucky enough to have a reading, which we got back in April when Damon came over to join the South African contingent at the London Book Fair, which actually, apart from him, pretty much failed to materialise because of the volcano cloud.
It happens like this. He sets out in the afternoon on the track that has been shown to him, and soon he leaves the little town behind. In an hour or so, he is among low hills covered by olive trees and grey stones, from which there is a view out over a plain that gradually descends to the sea. He is intensely happy, which is possible for him when he is walking and alone. As the road rises and falls, there are moments when he can see far ahead, and other moments when he can see nothing at all. He keeps looking out for other people, but the huge landscape seems to be completely deserted. The only sign of human beings is the occasional house, tiny and distant, and the fact of the road itself. Then, at some point, as he comes to the crest of a hill, he becomes aware of another figure far away. It could be male or female, it could be any age, it could be travelling in either direction, towards him or away. He watches until the road dips out of sight, and when he comes to the top of the next rise, the figure is clearer, coming towards him. Now they are watching each other, while pretending they are not. When they draw even, they stop. The figure is a man about his own age, dressed entirely in black. Black pants and shirt, black boots. Even his rucksack is black. What the first man is wearing, I don't know. I forget.
That was Damon Galgut reading from In a Strange Room. Now, Sarah, let's talk a bit about the omissions, which in a way is the big story at this stage in any prize, isn't it?
Yes, it's as much about what didn't make it through as what did. And I think this year the judges had a pretty tough job because, as we've said before, it was a very, very strong long list. But
Seven books didn't make it.
Yeah, from the Booker dozen of 13. In order, these were David Mitchell's The Thousand Autumns of Jacob de Zoet, Lisa Moore's February, Paul Murray's Skippy Dies, Rose Tremaine's novel Trespass, Christos Tsolkas's The Slap, and Alan Warner's The Stars in the Bright Sky.
So the one that's got most airplay, really, is the Christos Tsolkas, isn't it, The Slap?
Yeah.
Which has caused huge ructions.
Yes. Everyone's been talking about it. It's, you know, had huge sort of praise, but also huge blame. People saying, you know, this is just absolutely revolting, unpleasant novel, misogynistic, has, you know, that word's been bandied around. Claire, you've read it, I haven't, so I'm going to have to ask you to say whether or not you think the criticisms were fair and whether it really ought to have been on the list in the end or not.
Well, I thought it succeeded in what it set out to be. I don't think it set out to follow a literary model. It's like the Sopranos. It's like a sort of television miniseries. He is, of course, a screenwriter. And I think it does what it does very well. But it is absolutely a Marmite book. I think we described it as that when we talked about the long list, along with David Mitchell's very different Thousand Autumns of Jacob de Zoet. People love it or hate it.
And I read the David Mitchell book, and I thought it was completely enjoyable and, you know, very, very readable, but solid and perhaps less exciting than previous books of his. So I wasn't absolutely devastated not to see it on the shortlist, although he's another Booker bridesmaid, isn't he?
All we can say is, David, your time will come. It absolutely will come. You just have to keep going. There are a couple of less well-publicised ones. Lisa Moore, published very quietly in this early spring, disappeared without a trace and now is going to disappear again.
Yes, and I think that I personally think this is a real shame because it was a book that I reviewed back in February when it came out. No surprise there, given the title. And I just thought it was great. It was just a really well-written, interestingly structured, sort of moving story. And I'm, you know, I hope that the fact that it's been on the bookish long list is enough to have brought it to people's attention and that people will go on and read it because it's a really good book and it deserves to be read.
And that is worth bearing in mind, isn't it? That one of the great things about these long lists is it does give people a steer as to what to read. And so the books, even the books that don't make it, do get something out of it.
Yeah.
So what about Alan Warner, Stars in the Bright Sky? This is actually a sequel to his The Sopranos, which was the one he made his name with. That's not The Sopranos that I mentioned in connection with The Slap. This is The Sopranos, which is a group of girls going to sing. And in this case, they're going on a sort of package holiday. And he has, I've been reading it over this week, actually. He's got the most fantastic ear for dialogue. And, you know, it's great fun, these girls. I don't think anybody does it quite like Alan Warner. So moving on now, let's talk about Paul Murray, Skippy Dies, which is the one I'm really sad it's not got onto the shortlist.
And he was a big favourite of yours.
I really love this. And it's beautifully published by Hamish Hamilton in a little box with three volumes. And I have to say, I've given it to one 16-year-old and two 19-year-olds over the summer, and they've absolutely devoured it. So I think this book spans the generations. I think it's deceptively simple and a very, very lovely read. So how about Rose Tremaine? Now, her novel's Trespass. She's a bit of a blue chip, isn't she? I mean, she's got a hugely distinguished record.
Again, this is a book where I can understand why this hasn't gone through to the shortlist stage. It's just not one of her best novels, I don't think. She came in to talk to us earlier in the summer, and it's a completely enjoyable read, but it doesn't have the power of earlier books of hers or the scope, I don't think. So it felt like a sort of a slighter volume to me. But the one that I felt more disappointed about not seeing on the long list was Helen Dunmore's novel, The Betrayal. It was a sequel to her earlier novel, The Siege. Again, it's set in Stalinist Russia, this time right at the end of Stalin's reign before he dies. And it's very well written, very clean, clear prose, really conveys you into the world that she's writing about. So I felt that definitely was in with a good shot, and I feel quite disappointed not to see it there because I really liked it.
Now, the chair of judges, Andrew Motion, said, "We've chosen books which demonstrate a rich variety of styles and themes while in every case providing deep individual pleasures." And I think this brings us back to our point about a list being important. There's a personality in a list, isn't there? So, you know, there people like Helen Dunmore absolutely could have been on it, but the list itself is a great list, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. And yeah, as you say, I think that's true. It's with any list, perhaps I've been reading too much Tom McCarthy, but with any list like this, the connections between the books are almost as important as the individual books themselves. And you can see that, you know, you need to have a C to balance out a Finkler question. You know, all of these things are taken into account, I think, at the judging stage, and not to sort of disadvantage any books or advantage any, but just to get something that feels like a cohesive entity. And I think that's probably what the judging panel have come up with here.
They're going to have quite a job putting together a winner from this, aren't they? Well, that's it for our quick look at this year's Booker shortlist. And the winner will be announced on October the 12th. We'll be back on Friday with our normal weekly books podcast, which will include the poet Seamus Heaney reading from his new collection. Speak to you then. Goodbye from Sarah and from me.